You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet. And story is everything.
And we got a great one tonight.
We're your hosts, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to the Hot Texas Swing Band, and this is number 149, right?
149, and we thank you so much for coming along for the ride again with us tonight, whether you're live or you're catching this as a podcast later tonight or up on Podbean or wherever you like to go to get your podcast, you'll find us. And we're just so excited to have you with us tonight because we have a really, really great book to talk about. Who's our guest?
Micah. L. Thorpe. Egoliath Creek.
And here he is. He has just joined us on screen. Hello, Micah.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, we're so excited to chat with you. Where are you joining us from tonight?
Just outside of Portland, Oregon.
All right. You had something I know you wanted to share. I could tell.
It took all week for me to pronounce that word.
it looks like Egoliath, but it's Egoliath. That's right, Micah?
Because we want to. Yeah, I've heard it pronounced a couple different ways. So I think you get a little leniency on how you decide to say it. It's the I think it's the genus for an owl, or the Latin term for an owl.
Yes,
That's right. It is.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, what a story! Well, let's see. Before we get started, do you want to go ahead and give a little background on Micah?
Yeah, let's start with the bio, and then Micah can tell us something else, maybe. Micah L. Thorpe is a physician and award-winning writer based in Milwaukee, Oregon. A lifelong resident of Oregon, he grew up in the shadow of the timber industry, a waning 1960s counterculture, and Ken Kesey, the author. Tonight, we'll be talking about his newest book, Egoliath Creek. Welcome, Micah.
Thank you. And Micah, I went through my bookshelves looking for Ken Kesey, and I was disappointed that I didn't have One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I do have this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there you go. That's yeah,
Cowboy on the front, cowboy on the back. Of course, it has to be in my collection.
Yeah, that's great.
We were going to ask you, was there something you want to tell us about your background that wasn't in the bio?
I'm a physician. I'm actually a nephrologist. I'm a kidney specialist. So, my day job, mm-hmm. I take care of patients with kidney disease and dialysis and that sort of thing. And I guess the other thing that's not in my bio, which probably wouldn't be, I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So, I have no idea, grew up in kind of the 70s and 80s with Mean Joe Green and, Jack Ham and all that. So, kind of clicked then and been a big fan.
Those are great days. Yeah. And also, I have my own kidney doctor, but I can tell you if I need another one, I'll give you a call.
Yeah, we'll call him out. We can probably get an appointment with him faster than we can get here in New Mexico. Well, you mentioned in the bio about growing up in Oregon during those counterculture years of the 60s and 70s. When did you get interested in writing, and was there anything about the growing up period that influenced you or inspired your writing?
Yeah. So I actually grew up more in the kind of 70s, 80s, and the counterculture was kind of waning. It was obviously big in the 60s and early 70s. And I kind of caught the tail end of it, as I was, maturing. I've always had an interest in writing. I kind of wrote in college a little bit, and then kind of went dormant for a while as I went off to school and start a career and everything. And then during COVID, kind of picked back up again. I'd gone to some workshops and stuff, and during COVID, you needed some kind of distraction. Writing became a little more serious about it, and came out with a couple novels, and actually started this one a few years back as well. The nidus for this novel, came from, as you mentioned, Ken Kesey, who wrote what's probably the definitive, he's known for One Flew Over a Cuckoo's Nest, is probably his most famous novel, but he wrote one called Sometimes a Great Notion, which is a novel about a family that runs runs a little logging company down in Southern Oregon. And I wanted, it's as a novel about Oregon, it's, I think, considered, probably one of the best literary pieces. And I wanted to kind of continue that thread. The people in his novel, I knew, my dad's from down there, and I have uncles and stuff who are literally characters right out of that novel. So growing up and reading his stuff kind of prompted a lot of this.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I know you have a question.
I never read the One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, but I saw the movie with Jack Nicholson.
Yeah.
And I always thought that that movie did more for closing down mental institutions than any movie I ever saw. So it's interesting how movies affect society and can affect society in general. This Kesey guy, I should call him Ken Kesey, he was pretty famous. He wrote those two books, his most important books, in his 20s.
Yeah.
And I guess he got to experiment a little bit with psychedelic drugs along with Timothy Leary. But it seemed to me he didn't suffer any ill effects whatsoever.
Yeah, he seemed to get through it okay. Take from that what you want, I suppose. I don't recommend them, but he's famous also, of course, for he and the Grateful Dead took their magical bus trip across the United States, and he has a whole backstory that's separate from his literature. But the best part of him, I think, is the books that he wrote, and I do think Sometimes a Great Notion is probably the best of his books. I have a little bias there. It also was turned into a movie, but it was a little less. I think it had Henry Fonda in it, maybe.
Oh.
It was a little less, a little less famous than obviously Jack Nicholson
You mentioned the first two books that you wrote. Do you want to just briefly tell us a little bit about each of those?
During COVID, you just kind of start writing stuff. I wrote one called Uncle Joe's Muse, which is I try to write about nothing to do with medicine, sort of on purpose, just because it needs to be its own thing. Uncle Joe's Muse is the story of a kind of a derelict rock band in Vallejo, California. Four guys living in a dilapidated house that's kind of falling apart. And basically the upshot of the story is a girl, a 12-year-old girl, shows up on their doorstep and says, "My mom has sent me to live with my dad for the summer." And none of them can figure out who the dad is. And she's kind of not telling them either. So it's a little bit of a 3 minute a baby kind of thing.
Fun story.
Yeah. And then there was a follow up.
Yeah, at the end of that, it ended a little. I was told it ended a little abruptly, which I think is right. I think that. So I did a sequel to it called Uncle Joe's Senpai, which is similar story. Basically, continues the story. So
yeah,
never fun to write.
Well, we have so much to talk about. And again, I'm going to hold up the book for those that are listening rather than watching. And this is a gorgeous cover, too. This is Egolius Creek with tonight's featured author, Micah Thorpe. We're going to go right ahead, Micah, and jump a little bit ahead of time and head right for our first sponsor spot. And that is Blue Cottage. And let me just tell you about Blue Cottage. Are you a writer? Maybe you'd like to increase your social media presence, refresh your website, or like we just did, launch a website or a landing page. Our sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, are standing by to assist you. Here's exciting news about a new feature offered to writers. And when we come back, we'll be diving into Egoliath Creek. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Authors, welcome home. Every author needs a website, a home base for their brand. Professionally showcase your books and brand with a custom website landing page starting at $369. Bluebookshelf.com. It's a great feeling to be home. Contact the Blue Cottage team today to get started.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking with Micah L. Thorpe. And Egoliath Creek.
I want to go there. I want to go visit that creek.
You think we can find it?
We're gonna talk about the creek in a moment. But first, you want to talk a little bit about some of you've won already an award for this book.
A 2025 Ippy Award.
Independent Publishers Book Awards.
Yeah.
So tell us about that.
Yeah, no, it was a surprise. It's always kind of validating when someone kind of recognizes something that you've written like that. So it was a surprise. I actually found out it was in my email junk box when I discovered it. So that was a real surprise. Obviously, should have been looking a little more closely, but it's always nice to have that kind of recognition.
So when you opened, was it spam? Was it in trash or spam? Had it gone?
Yeah,
it was in spam.
What? I'm like, wait a minute. This kind of looks important. Yeah. I had to open it.
Almost gone.
So there's a point to that, listeners, our beloved followers. You might want to open your spam every now and again.
Check the spam.
And so when you opened it and you read what it said, what was your first response to yourself?
You kind of like, what? Wait a minute, what is this? And then you're, oh, this is good. And of course, I immediately, forwarded it off to the publisher, to Mary and Elizabeth, and said, I think we won something, you know, so that was great.
That's really fun. Now the book is not, it's out, it's available at the moment, I think, for direct ordering, but it actually releases.
Yes. September 16th.
September 16th is the date. And that is so exciting. Are you getting a lot of, butterflies and excitement, anticipation of your launch?
There's less of that and more about like just the logistical, you have this list of stuff you need to do and like, okay, we're going to go do a signing here and a, reading there and just trying to get all that stuff organized. It's a lot of that right now. Very, very busy. Haven't really had time to kind of think about it, but everything's getting set up and, looking really, really excited to getting it out there in the world.
And readers, you need this book. So you need to not only he's going to get it out in the world and he's going to get it in your hands for you to enjoy. And Jim, let's see. Do you want to? I know we want to ask about the Timber Wars.
What? The Timber Wars? Let's go back a minute. You've got a lot of book signings lined up, right?
I've got a couple of Barnes and Noble, I think, on September 20th. The big one will be Annie Bloom's, which is a bookstore here in Portland near Portland on the 25th. Those will be two big ones. And I think I'm going to be up at Spokane at the Pacific Northwest Booksellers Association.
Oh, great. That's going to be so great. Yeah. Take a lot of pictures. You'll want to remember everything that happens,
Will you also give a little talk before you do the book signing?
What is this? What it's about? That kind of thing. Absolutely. Yeah.
It's always interesting to go to a book signing and hear the author talk about his book. So.
Yes, it. Yeah. We would encourage that, just like going to live music, going to a live book signing, being able to chat with the author, hear the author talk about the book, and see him up front and personal. And, you know, again, COVID shut so much of that down, and it's been 5 years, but still, it feels like we're just getting, you know, momentum going again. So. It's just really special to have that time. The Micah, we know the book takes place in Oregon Forest, and yeah. The Timber Wars are not exactly referenced, but we know that Timber Wars and the logging industry are a big part of the backstory to this story. Would you just bring us up to date on sort of what were the Timber Wars and what is the fallout of them still today?
Yeah, so this book is set kind of in modern times, but it the subject of it and what it kind of deals with is the fallout from what I grew up around. You know, I grew up in a rural area outside of outside of Eugene, Springfield. You know, there were logging trains that actually ran up and down the valley that I lived in, which is kind of an analogous place for Golias Creek. And you know, what happened in the 60s, there was a graduate student at Oregon State who'd written a paper, his thesis about, the Northern spotted owl. And basically he realized that this owl, really could only live, and was tied to old growth forests, which are, you know, very, very old forests. There's different definitions of them, but they're essentially forests that are almost never been logged. There aren't a lot of them left. So he wrote this paper, and then kind of in the 80s, there started to be lawsuits where, you know, most of Oregon is, or a large share of Oregon is public lands. And most of the logging that had occurred was on public lands. So there were a bunch of lawsuits to try to shut down, some of the timber sales. And those included some protests. People would go out in the woods and, chain themselves to rocks and trees. And, some of it was pretty, kind of violent. They would stick, stakes, metal, kind of like nails into trees. So that if a logger would go to cut it down, it would, break the chain on a chainsaw. And there was lots of back and forth, over the course, really the kind of the '80s and into the early '90s. And to a large degree, it did, the timber industry at the end of it was nothing like it was at the beginning. It was really a fraction of the size. And there were a lot of other changes that occurred, too. It wasn't just the effects of, the environmental movement. There was a bunch of economic changes that occurred. The number of people it took to run a logging crew shrunk pretty dramatically. But clearly, those things all had a massive effect. And you look at the timber industry today, and it exists, but it's much, much smaller. It's a fraction of what it was kind of back in its heyday. And this book, I really wanted to kind of highlight the tensions that existed between the different entities that were a part of that. The communities that relied on timber revenues. The individuals who, they made their livelihoods working out in the woods, and then also the environmental part of it. The fact that there weren't a lot of old growth forests left, and clearly there was probably the right thing to do was to curtail logging at least in those areas. So there's a lot of these natural tensions that exist, and that was really what I wanted to write about was the sort of nidus of those tensions and the impact that it had on everybody involved. So.
She really captured that. And I was going to ask, back a step, you seem to know a lot about the logging industry. Did you have to do a bunch of research, or did you used to chop down trees yourself?
I mean, I grew up in the middle of it. I haven't done any logging, but I grew up in the middle of it. Okay. My parents had 30 acres of mostly timber. And again, it was the area that I grew up in was, that's what people did. There was a big mill in Springfield and literally there was a train that would run up and down the valley. When I was a kid, it'd go about a mile an hour. It was super slow, beat up, these beat up, They weren't, you know, they had the sides on them where they would be able to put logs in them, and they would load these, you know, this train up, and it would just clank along at, you know, almost no speed at all, you know, back and forth from the woods to the mill. So that, you know, I kind of grew up in the midst of much of it. And I grew up very much in the middle of the conflict. So,
I thought you did a pretty good job with explaining, you know, growing trees. You know, I'm always thinking, well, you cut one down, you plant two, you know, or something like that. And that's really doing a good job. But you indicated that only 10% are likely to survive of the saplings that are planted.
Yeah.
And that's pretty, you got to plant a lot of trees, you know.
Yeah, after they cut down an area, yeah, or there's been a forest fire or something, and they go in and kind of clean up the area. You know, there's a replanting that occurs where folks will go in and they'll put thousands of trees in the ground, thousands of little tiny seedlings, and only a portion of those, a pretty small portion, will actually make it to adulthood, which is appropriate. Given the fact that you can only have a certain density of trees in a forest, and even when they grow, a lot of times you need to go in and thin out what's there just to allow what's left to continue to grow.
The beauty of your writing, Micah, is it's so compelling, and I use these words often: compelling and engaging. And when Jim just talked about how you show us about the reseeding, you know, we see that through a character doing it. And there's so much of what you share is the author's voice, but it's also activities done through the characters. This is a very character-driven book, even though we have all kinds of episodes and consequences. And it is absolutely an incredible story of bringing together family, land ownership, heritage, legacy, and the environment, protecting the environment or understanding the environment, how those three, they're almost like tributaries that kind of come down to the creek. And there's just sort of an explosion. But you take us through, other than Dr. Richards, I think, I really felt all the characters, especially Don Carlson and his family, and we're going to talk about them in greater detail. But, you know, each one of them, I just enjoyed when they were on the page. And there were times I wept, and there were times I laughed, and there were times that I thought you had me as a reader reading and then saying, wait a minute. And then rereading all of your narrative that is about the environment, the nature. When I don't want to say environment, because about nature, there's this scene. Do you remember that scene where the Magolias Creek has risen, and there's a mama deer, there's a doe, and she has two fawns that are following her, and she just goes across the creek, and one of them just follows her, little trepidation. And you know, I could just see that scene. I could hear that water. And I won't say what happens in that scene. You have to read it.
Oh, good.
But your writing is so lyrical, and it just demands to be read aloud. We felt it just demanded, didn't we? We're like, Jim, listen to this, or have you gotten to this yet? And we were just so caught up in just beautiful, beautiful writing, and sometimes about harsh things, but so well crafted, Micah. So well crafted.
Oh, thank you, thank you for that.
Yeah, you know, there are a lot of selfish interest in the story, as I guess there is in every story. You know, I kind of wrote down, I said, one man's battle against nature, individual freedom, and his ability to endure. You know, our protagonist, our main guy, he's trying to maintain a lifestyle that his father had, his grandfather had, and he's having a really difficult time.
Yeah. Micah, tell us a little bit about the creek. Is this a real...
No.
Tell us about the setting of the story.
So I actually did borrow the concept from Sometimes a Great Notion from Ken Kesey. So in his book, he writes about a place called Wakanda, which is like a Native American name for a town in Southern Oregon. And if you go looking for that town, it doesn't exist, but he kind of places it. You kind of know roughly where it is. And people for years have argued about which little town in Southern Oregon is Wakanda. What is he writing about? Agolius Creek is kind of like that. It doesn't exist. There's probably a couple or three places that it could be, but it's also play. You know, I wanted to make it close enough to a place that was real that you would go looking for it on a map, and you kind of know roughly where it is, but not exactly because it's not really there. It's one of those kind of settings, and to a large degree, a lot of it's based again on where I grew up outside of the valley I grew up in. So. It's not real, but it could be.
Yeah.
How about the Spotted Owl? Is the Spotted Owl, is it? According to what I read, that was the name for the Spotted Owl, but the Spotted Owl still exists?
Oh, yeah. They're here. I mean, there's a long backstory to that. That's, you know, that conflict is continued within the biologic community and within fish and wildlife and everywhere else. So though that was years ago, it's still, you know, it's still out there.
Oh. Well, and in this story, again, that biologist, Dr. Richards, isn't seem to be that concerned about the owl as much as what is he concerned about, Micah? What's he looking for?
So this one I used a tree vole. And ironically, there actually is I think it's the red-footed tree vole in the coastal range in Oregon, which is, you know, kind of been on the edge of needing to be on the endangered species list. So there is actually a real vole that kind of is kind of similar to this. Different part of the state, different range, but it's a little vole that runs up and down the trees, and the owls eat it.
Owl food. Our main characters all refer to it as owl food, I think, don't they?
Yeah, the fat professor. Yeah, he causes a lot of problems.
Dr. Richards, we're going to get into characters in our next segment, so hold that thought. Micah, we hope you're having a good time. It's so delightful to have you with us. We're going to step away for just a moment to tell you about one of the places that you can order the books of many of our author guests, including tonight's featured title, Agolius Creek. You can find their books on our Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some of the very unforgettable characters in this book. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer. We're talking with Micah Thorpe, Agolius Creek. This is really, it's a fun book. It's a serious book. It's an enjoyable book. And you probably, for some of us, probably a tough time putting it down, right? Once you start.
Yes. And it'll really make you, it'll make you think in a very, good way.
It will.
We're going to take some in-depth conversation now about characters.
We briefly talked about a character here the other night when we were talking. You know, and this fellow by the name of Tim Hamford.
Tim's got a quote.
You know, what Tim does is when the small loggers cut down a few trees, he takes them off to the mill or the scaler to have them, you know, figure out how much they're worth. He works on a commission. He gets about 15% of whatever the value of the logs he takes. You know, I'm reading this story, you know, Micah, and I come across this line here, and I it's like I'm driving 60 miles down the road, and I jam on my brakes stop on a dime and say, whoa, we got a, he owns a 1999 Kenworth. And I say, he's home. Yeah,
we'll read us the quote.
Let's read that quote.
Read that quote.
Tim Hamford drives his truck up the Golis Highway. He's proud of the truck, a 1999 Kenworth T800 with a 1974 left axle. Every week he washes it and wipes the chrome off it by hand. He posts pictures on Facebook the way his neighbors post pictures of their kids and dogs. Okay. You know, the other part of this story was, and we briefly talked about it the other night, I said, this is a line from a song from C.W. McCall, a country and western writer and singer back in 1975 about a convoy going across the country. And I said, word of Michael, word about C.W. McCall.
He walked out of the office, yeah.
Was this just a coincidence?
He walked out of the office and up to the sofa yeah. where I was reading, and he said, can I tell you, did you? And he was, yeah, so we just knew he had to read this quote tonight.
Yeah, no, that's great.
What did you tell us? I can't remember.
Yeah, I hadn't made the connection. So I was actually, when you guys told me that, I was like, oh, I gotta look that one up. That's pretty good.
Well, and then when we were reading it again, and the line about, you know, how he keeps it so wonderful, and the chrome it polishes. And I think, Micah, it might be the only thing in the book that's not decaying.
That's probably true. That's probably about right. Yep. That is probably, yeah, the rest of the forest, you know, it's a Pacific Northwest forest. So everything is, you know, moss and fungi and, you know, detritus and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, so right. Homesteads and the gas station and the, you have several really fun places that we go into, bars and, you know, different places. And I think he pretty much starts almost every description with kind of how it's decaying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another wonderful, just wonderful writing. Yeah. So, Jim, go ahead and ask your favorite question.
Yeah. We know you're the author and you got control of these folks, you know, but do any of your characters ever surprise you?
Oh, yeah. The short answer is, you know, yes. You know, you kind of start going down a, you know, and I'm sure you guys hear this from other writers, but you go, you know, you start going down a rabbit hole with one of the characters, and they're like, oh, what if they did this? And you know, in the beginning, you had no idea that's where you're going to end up, but, absolutely. You always end up coming up with stuff for each of the characters that you didn't really see at the beginning. And sometimes even if you have the larger story arc, you know, there's little bits or little things you want to throw in to make them a little more real. And those things are the kind of the fun parts really of character building.
Mm-hmm. Were there any characters? This is probably my favorite question. Are there any characters that just said, hey, I'm here. Write me in this story. Anybody that, you know, keep tapping on your shoulder or showing up every time you sat down?
Yeah, there's a lot of passive characters, you know, who are kind of background, you know, interesting, but also part of the background. Stacy, the daughter, is the one that I think really, you know, in some ways is the hard nail in the story. You know, she, again, a lot of the characters have more of this kind of passive role, but she's the one who in many ways is sort of as a storytelling device, is kind of a driver for much of it. You know, she's in
all that. Oh, and the scenes with her are just terrific from the first time we meet her back in, I think, a Boston courtroom. And then when we meet up with her again, we don't know if you have plans to do a sequel or even look 10 years down the road and pick up, but I think Stacy deserves to have more time on the page.
Yeah, she could have her own novel or story for sure.
Yeah,
she's quite a character. You know, it's a tiny, 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 tiny spoiler alert, but when she's a kid, you know, she stands up for herself and actually beat up two boys at the same time.
Yeah.
She's
a tough lady.
Yeah. Were there any characters that you really enjoyed writing?
So the main character, Dawn, you know, that I like Dawn for a bunch of reasons, but you know, the key thing about Dawn and the device that I use in the, and you guys know this in the story is, Dawn's, you know, most of the story is told in, you know, kind of a third person present tense. And then interspersed within that are Dawn's thoughts, you know, and they're all, they're italicized. They're only hit, you know, he's the only voice like that. That's kind of a first person voice outside of the prologue and epilogue. He's the only one that actually has a, you know, kind of that sort of voice. So, you know, coming up with stuff that he would think or how he would respond or his, you know, and, you know, the goal was to make him really kind of, you know, he's wise, you know, he may not have the education. He may not, you know, totally get everything, but he has a certain wisdom that's, that he's inculcated with. And that was really my goal with him. So he was fun to write and thoughtful. It was a real great task to be able to write about him.
Yeah. Yeah.
You captured him, you know, he's a backwoods guy, but you know, he's a real thinker. So, it's, you captured that essence.
Well, and you give us all of his backstory. So we meet him here and now, but the more that we learn about his backstory and the early years of marriage and just, you know, everything, I found that he was just such a likable character. And that everything that he said in the italics, everything that he said, like you say, is wise. There's just terrific wisdom. And I have to say, I really liked it when he shot down the drone.
Yeah. That was kind of fun, right? You know, get out the shotgun. Yep.
Get out that
shotgun. Yeah, he had that shotgun close by. Yep.
Did you know he was going to do that? Did you know that there'd be a drone and that he'd do that? Or did that?
It sort of made sense that that would be that would be the outcome for the drone. It was not going to hover for too long. So.
Okay, well, we're going to call out a name now.
Okay.
And it could be a person, but it could be a restaurant. It could be any number of things. And just, you can say pass, or you can just give us a sentence or two. And this just helps our listeners and your potential readers have some idea about the people that are engaged and the places that are engaged. Do you want to read out the first one? Pick a name?
Well, we talked about Stacy a little bit.
Yeah.
And We have a guy in the background that is deserving everything, but a guy by the name of Kent. He's a newspaper man.
Yeah. So Kent was sort of a device to tell to be able to describe the courtroom scenes in a way that you might if you weren't just describing a courtroom scene. So, you know, there's the great seal that sits in front of the court that, you know, is flashing in the attorney's eyes if they don't know where to stand. And there's the fact that he's, you know, he's been in a lot of courtrooms. And when he sees Stacy for the first time, you know, he knows that she's like really good because she doesn't look flat, you know, fancy or flashy or anything. You can barely tell she's an attorney, but that's a sign that she's really, really good. So he provides a lot of that context for, particularly for the courtroom scenes. I really wanted to use him.
So. Yeah. And he's looking for an award-winning story, kind of the way our Dr. Richards. Tell us a little bit about Dr. Richards.
So I think he actually is like a couple of professors I had at Oregon State.
we wondered.
Yeah. So he's an emeritus professor, you know, biological in biology. And he's looking for that, you know, lifetime achievement award, and is going to find this thing that he's heard about. And, he's of course the one that kind of discovers the vole, and is on a mission to find the vole. And really that's his only focus. That's really all he kind of is interested in. But of course that starts the whole, you know, that starts the whole conflict.
And he escapes.
You have the list. You want to call out somebody?
Let's talk about Zeke a little bit.
Zeke.
Yeah, so Zeke's the youngest child. There's Dawn and his three kids. Stacy's the middle. Zeke is, you know, he's born his mom dies, which is early in the story. He's born at her death. So he kind of grows up a little bit on his own. He's a little separated from his older brother and sister, and he's very much into the woods and the forest. And, you know, for him, it's everything's very spiritual. You know, the outdoors and going into the forest is almost a spiritual retreat for him. So he obviously has a different point of view about everything than his siblings or his father.
Mm-hmm. And of course, we have to ask about Billy.
Yeah, so he's the oldest son. He's been forced to take on a lot more responsibility, you know, at a pretty young age than he probably should have. He's tough. He reveres his father and really wants to kind of be like him, and you know, sees himself as taking over the homestead. When he's far enough along. Not really sure what he's going to do with it, but details aside, that's kind of how he sees himself. And he's very much in favor of making sure that it is there and that he has access to do whatever he wants with it when it's his.
Right. They're the family, Dad, Don, and the three kids, they have a really special relationship though with each other. And I found you just write so tenderheartedly about the three kids, and they are each very different and real different individuals that you clearly draw for us. And yet they have a love and a respect for each other, and they seem to really read each other very well. They know, you know, Stacy and Billy would say the same thing about Zeke. And Zeke and Billy would say the same thing about Stacy, that they just seem to be in sync that way, even though their lives have taken them different directions and in different parts of the country even, but they've been brought back home because of this situation with dad's land, dad's forest, right?
Yeah. My goal with the three of them was to provide, you know, so first off, to provide different points of view, different kind of views of, you know, this problem, this conflict, but also to kind of point out, you know, this is a family, and, you know, just like we're in all these conflicts right now. I mean, you can look at just about any issue and there's all of these things where people are butting heads, but at the end of the day, I mean, there's still stuff that holds everybody together. And I wanted to both make sure that their views were all kind of respected, that every, you know, this wasn't a, you know, this isn't leaning one direction or the other. It's kind of giving some perspective and empathy to all of them. And then to also sort of recognize this is a family, you know, and just because, you know, they differ, that doesn't mean that they're not a family and that they don't love and respect each other.
Yeah. You take us to some business establishments. I really liked your description of each one, but just tell us about the Green Tortoise Bar.
Yeah, I think that's real. There actually is, I think, a Green Tortoise in Portland, but there's also one down in Eugene, and it's not called the Green Tortoise, but there's a place that the description fits very well. I'll put it that way. Actually, it's probably more than one place.
Yeah.
But it's one of those stinking college-ish bars where, you know, the floors are all sticky and it kind of smells.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always people in it and, you know, stuff's kind of old hanging on the walls, but, you know, it's a place where everybody goes to congregate.
Yeah, I guess we've all seen a bar like that, you know?
Oh, I have. Never.
You haven't?
I have. There's one last character. I am looking at time, but there's one last character, and that would be Fire.
Yeah. So, you know, the book begins and ends with fire. Not really a spoiler there, but it's also something, there's a piece I put in there specifically about that, a descriptive part about the Agolius Valley and the people in it. You know, it's always something, if you're living out in the woods, particularly now, it's always something that you kind of think about. You know, wildfires are real, forest fires are, you know, just devastating, and they're really uncontrollable. So it is something that I think, you know, it's always in the back of people's minds. It's kind of a fear, and maybe in some ways represents the fire itself represents kind of an existential fear that people generally have about losing, you know, losing their land and losing the stuff that's on it. So it's both real and metaphorical.
And I think today, fire, you know, in New Mexico, we're fearful of fire. California, we were fearful. I mean, fire now definitely a part of your story, but any reader, when there's something about fire, could find that to be very relevant in their own lives or the lives of their family or loved ones. So we are going to take our last break, Micah, and we're just going to take a quick moment to thank our sponsor, OutWestShop.com, which is Jim and me. And when we come back, we're going to find out what's Micah got up next. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out OutWestShop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with the Writer, Michael L. Thorpe, and this great book, Eagleus Creek.
Oh, it's so good.
You know, Michael, you start each chapter with a little quote at the top. Most of them are biblical and inspired, so what's that about?
Yeah, so I like doing that. I did it with my other book, having just a little phrase. It kind of sets the tone for the chapter. And in this one, each chapter kind of has a theme, so I went out and tried to kind of find something that would fit the tenor of it.
You did it very well. Very well. I got to where, I'm like, oh, what's going to happen? Oh,
yeah, a little clue.
So Micah, what are you working on? Are you have anything that you're working on next?
Very slowly. I've been working on one that's about that. I'd like to write something about a city called Vanport. That it's a great story here in Portland. It kind of is what created modern Portland in many ways. City, World War II city is literally built in a year. Wow. It's the second largest city in the state, and literally is created in a year. And then in a single day, it gets washed away in a flood. I mean, it's just
gosh, that's a story.
Yeah, fascinating true story.
That's the story. So where can people find you, follow you, and get your book?
So I have a website, micahthorpe.com. It's also great to buy books from your independent bookstores. So you guys obviously have a great one there. And then also from the indie publishers. So type18books.com, all one word, no numbers. Any of those places is great to support the indie bookstores and publishers.
Yes, absolutely. Jim, you have a quote.
We have a quote. We have one last quote.
Choices.
This is from our guy, our protagonist, the number one folk, Don Carlson. And he's wondering to himself, as he reviews both sides of the issue, does he have the right to cut his trees or not? Which story's right? He says, am I the hero or the villain? And that's the hard part, see? The villain is the only one who don't know that he's the bad guy. If I am the villain, just by the way of things, I ain't ever gonna know.
He's so wise.
Yeah. He's a philosophical guy, I'll tell you.
My goodness. Well, thank you, Micah, for being with us for episode 149. You will be able to find that later tonight up on Podbean. It'll already immediately replay on LA Talk Radio Facebook's page, our Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page, and also LA Talk Radio's YouTube page. And we want to just say thank yous to, of course, Micah and to the Hot Texas Swing Band who open and close the show. And I have their CD here somewhere. I think we forgot to say hello to them at the beginning of the show.
We did. We mentioned them.
Sam Hassan, who keeps everything running so smoothly for the show. We really thank you, Sam. Next week, a good friend of ours is returning.
Joe Brown.
E. Joe Brown. Joe to his friends. He's returning this book, his newest, I think just released yesterday. And this is A Cowboy's Dilemma, part three of the Kelly Can saga. And we are so excited to have Joe with us back again. And that's next Thursday. So do you have any final
thoughts? Any good final thoughts? You know, we appreciate the interview. Thanks, Micah.
Oh, thank you. You guys are great. It's been fun.
It's been fun. Well, as we always say, it's always a great day out west.
Keep riding.
We'll keep reading.
See you down the trail. See you next week. Have great book events, Micah. We'll be thinking about you.
Thank you.
Good luck.